Welcome to another episode of Summit to Soul Mountain, where I am blessed to cross paths with some amazing humans, very unique, and just a powerful place to find playfulness in the journey of discovering life's potential, both mine and others, and getting curious through sharing story and asking questions. This conversation has been a long time coming with my brother here, and I'm super excited for this. Today, I'm joined on the trail with Alexander Schimmel. We met the first time in 2020, and I joined an online cacao ecstatic dance, little online thing as the pandemic was getting underway and stuff. And then later, you were my first life coach, and you were really like a big guiding light in that time of my life. And I was going through a lot of transformation, and you really helped me along that journey, getting clear, getting concise, and seeing myself differently, and seeing myself in a more whole way than I was at that time. And yeah, I'm just very grateful to be here with you. Alexander is an exceptional yoga teacher. He leads retreats and trainings with a much bigger purpose than just yoga teacher trainings. Being around initiations, creating and developing leadership skills. He leads somatic breath work and helps people understand and heal themselves through the body, through their own experiences. And he's just an amazing human with a big heart, and the world needs more people like you. And yeah, thanks for joining me today, Alexander.
Thank you, brother. What an introduction.
Absolutely, man.
Yeah, nice job. I'm really grateful to be here and to have this conversation. And it is a long time coming.
Yes. We've been trying to get this down and always in divine timing, you know.
For sure.
That's what I say.
For sure.
What's been what's present for you right now? Let me ask you that. Let's start there.
Present for me right now. Yeah, I'm definitely in a phase of life where I am really more focused than I feel like I've been in a long time, and really focused on building and growing my business and the impact that I'm having. And I'm committed to feeling what all in feels like. And I feel like in my life, there's been times where I've thought that I was all in, but yeah, as I continue to grow and evolve, I realize like, wow, I've actually just been scratching the surface a little bit. It reminds me of like the Marine Corps 40% rule. I think you may have heard it, or I may have shared it with you before, but in the Marine Corps, I'm not in the Marine Corps, but I really love this, this little idea that when you think you're giving it all, you're actually only like tapping into 40% of what's possible. So for me, it's like, whoa, what is possible if I tap into even just a little bit more of that? And, so I'm really focused on that and growing for my next yoga teacher training. And I'm getting ready to go to Guatemala in a week for Embodiment Festival that I'm going to lead breath work there. And then I'm co-facilitating an intimacy retreat. So I have some cool things on the horizon.
Very cool. What is it like for you to lead these kinds of experiences now? Like looking back at, you know, who you were 5 or 6 years ago, and now reflecting on that and feeling what it feels like to be all in and stuff. What does that feel like?
Well, I think leading these experiences, there's a couple of things that are different. One, for me, I think even when I started to lead retreats, which I led my first retreat in 2016, so 7, almost 8 years ago now. And at that time, I didn't even really know what the word embodiment or integrity, like I didn't even really know what this was. So what I've seen over the years is just a deeper level of embodying what I'm sharing. Turning knowledge into wisdom is what one of my mentors called it, or how he addressed it. So I feel like that's a big one, is it's a lot more embodied what I teach. Like I've been on the path now for a long time. I've walked the path, and I'm able to share the things that I've experienced firsthand and experimented with. And also when I lead these experiences, one of the things that I've noticed is I used to really have this like, here's the plan and everything is mapped out and detailed. And now I do a lot more listening to the field and to God and to like what's needed in the moment. So that feels good. It's a deeper trusting that comes through in a lot of my work.
Yeah, that's got to be just nice, you know, as like a personal reflection, like trusting in yourself, trusting in God. And for me, I think, I imagine that would be, well, I know it in little things, like when I think of my work, like carpentry and coaching and teaching yoga, like if I'm sticking really close to the plan and to like the constructs of what I want it to look like and stuff, is normally it'll show up really well and it'll have good results. And then also knowing the feeling of like what it feels like to just let that flow come in and stuff, and it feels more natural, you know?
Yeah, totally. For me, that's like the balance of the masculine and feminine, right? It's the inner union that you create, because for sure I love to have the plan. This is the masculine part of me that's like plan, order, structure, direction. And then also letting the feminine be online, where there's that feminine oracle, that's intuition and flow and channel that can open up. And yeah, this has also been a huge part of my path, is finding that balance between my inner masculine and feminine, and like trying to find the union within. And this has been work for me. This has been, it's been a challenge, but it's cool to be able to see it and bring it into different parts of my life.
What has been, and I'm sure that there has been many moments that you could pick and choose from that would say is your starting point, but what is one of your starting points to that like really brought you to walk the path of where you're walking?
Yeah, there's a few. When I think about this, the first one, I want to give credit to my mother, who's my first yoga teacher. You know, she taught yoga, and like she said, obviously I don't remember this, she said that she's like delivered me with crystals in her hand. And wow. I do remember when I was a child, I would go to her yoga classes and I would like listen to her meditation tapes. It was present in my life, even though I wasn't super I wasn't necessarily super into it, but it was very present in my life. And I think I got that like osmosis teachings as a young kid. That was a big one. And then I'd say another, like my next starting point was, next starting point was probably when I was senior in high school, freshman year of college. This was kind of my spiritual awakening. And I don't remember exactly what happened from it, and maybe plant medicine. It was around the time I ate mushrooms for the first time. It was when I started to realize, like, you know, ganja, cannabis is an entheogen. It was something that I could take and like connect deeper with God and have like some insights. So that was another big one for me. And then I would say the third major point that really like set me off on this path was actually getting diagnosed with Crohn's when I was 22. It was right after college. I got diagnosed with Crohn's disease, and that was really God and life and the universe telling me it's time to live the things that you know. Cause I knew it for a while. Like I was into healthy living, healthy eating, but I wasn't living it. It wasn't embodying it. And that was really the moment in my life. It was like, okay, it's time to really embody these things and make them part of my life on a daily basis. So that was, yeah, it's tough to say like what was the first starting point, but those were like three pivotal moments in my life that got me on this path.
That's really powerful. It's really cool that, I mean, for me, I love yoga and it's been powerful for me and stuff. So like, and I wasn't, my mom or dad, like they were never practice yoga or anything, you know? So it's really cool to hear that, like you have such a deep root of that, and that your mom, you know, shared that with you and stuff. And, from such a young age, and then also with the mushrooms too, like from my experience, mushrooms were an opening for me as well. And, not realizing it at the time, you know, like you take them, or at least I think that with it's more common to stumble into mushrooms as just like a recreational drug, and you don't really get to know what they're doing to you until like later down the line. Because they were very powerful for me in like an opening, and I still tell people all the time that like I'm still processing some of those first experiences and like learning to like integrate, or like I'll think about those experiences and be like, oh, this is like I'm understanding this now and stuff.
Yeah, for sure. I had a mentor. I met someone. It's funny. I spent just a few weeks with him when I was in Israel. This is again when I was probably like 19 or 20 years old, and he was really the first person that talked about plant medicine to me, like referred to these things as plant medicine. He's also an herbalist, like really super cool guy, and he started to share a little bit of like how to take plant medicine in a ceremonial way. And I think I'd eaten mushrooms one time before I met him. And then a few weeks after I got back from that Israel trip, I took a bigger dose of mushrooms in a more ceremonial way. And that was like, wow, that was a really powerful, life-changing experience for me. And I was channeling a lot. I was with two of my best friends in my backyard, and we're just laying on the earth, and I'm channeling. And I never had this experience before. And the things that I was saying, it was making me cry. Like I was crying a lot as I was talking. And my friends also, there's the three of us, you know, 19, 20 year old men crying together, which is not a place that I've been before with men. That was not a common thing. And yeah, that was a really huge, huge initiation for me into this world of ceremony and plant medicine and channeling. And it was also the moment I was like, all these spiritual ideas, things that I've read about, things that I kind of thought were, maybe this is how it is. It felt like it was cemented in that moment. It was like, this is truth, capital T truth. And that was a really, yeah, that was a really pivotal moment for me. Yeah. Really special.
I could see it in your face, you know, that's very cool. And I'm curious, have you ever like talked to your parents about these kinds of experiences with them?
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny because my parents are very open, open now about it. But actually after that mushroom experience, it was maybe the same night or maybe the next day. I don't remember so much, but I told my mom about it. And I was like, yeah, I took mushrooms, and I like felt like God was talking through me, or Christ consciousness. I just felt so much love and such an opening in my heart and such a deep connection. And my mom, she didn't share so much of her experiences, but she's like, you need to listen or read Ram Dass, Be Here Now. And I had no idea who Ram Dass was at the time. And then she gave me her copy of Be Here Now from the 70s. My mom was like a hippie back in the day. So this, you know, it's Be Here Now. It's like some pages are falling out. And I went through that, and I was like, yeah, it was so cool. It was a mind-blowing experience. And then Ram Dass became one of my greatest teachers. So it was cool to get that from them. And my parents both have their own spiritual ways of life. Like my dad, there's not necessarily rituals that he practices, but definitely like his mindset and the way he looks at life. It's a very unique spiritual way. And yeah. And then my mom has her yogic perspective and her yogic kind of hippie view that she's instilled. But it's been really cool to be able to share that with my parents. And I didn't know I could at first, you know, there's a lot of fear and resistance of like, what are they going to say? What are they going to think? And I was old enough to just be like, hey, here's what I'm up to. And here's where I'm going. And thank God they've been very supportive and understanding of that journey.
Yeah, that's huge to be able to have that, just that open dialogue of it, you know, and to still be loved and seen, you know, and it's tough, especially because it's scary to talk to. Well, I say that from my own beliefs of, you know, talking to parents or talking to adults and like thinking of my own predetermined experiences and stuff where they're going to shun you or, you know, put it down or say, say it's bad. It's a different time back then compared to where it is now. Like, it's so openly talked about and stuff. Mm-hmm. What's your relationship with plant medicines now? Yeah,
my relationship with plant medicine, it's plant medicine still is like my greatest teachers. And it's interesting to think about this, that now it's been, I'm 34. So it's been like 14, 15 years since I've been sitting in some type of ceremonies. And it started with mushrooms and LSD. It's been a while since I've taken LSD. I try to stick to the things that are natural and from the earth mostly. So mushrooms and just in the past few years, a lot more journeys with ayahuasca, it's some of my deepest healing has come from these plant medicine journeys. Mm-hmm. And I think what's really important, especially though, it's like the plant medicine, it shines a light on areas that were previously in the dark, like unconscious. It brings consciousness to the unconscious, and the healing happens through integration. That's almost the same word, right? I talk about this a lot. The word healing comes, it means wholeness. And the word integration, it comes from integer, if we remember math class, an integer is a whole number. So integration means like making it whole. And I think that this is a really important thing with plant medicine, is it's not just about having journey after journey, but it's integrating what you learn and taking little pieces back and putting the pieces back together. So for me, this has been my greatest like therapy, medicine, way of accepting myself, way of grieving, way of looking at the things that I haven't been looking at. And I'm so grateful for these plants and for the tribes and for the humans that have kept these plants going. And there's a guy that I know in Costa Rica, and he talks about it's not just keeping the plants available for people, right? Which maybe we're starting to see even with pharmaceuticals, where they're making like compounds that are similar to psilocybin, but it's not from the natural state. And one thing this guy says is it's like not just keeping the plants alive, but keeping their songs alive. Mm-hmm. The songs of the plants. And the songs of the plants to me are like the indigenous ways of using them, or using them in ceremony and keeping that natural part alive. But yeah, I really love plant medicine. And you know, and I also want to say, like, ceremonial for sure, that's the way it normally is. And there's times where I take a microdose before I go dance and mm-hmm. you know, and I don't drink alcohol anymore. And it's this is also a blessing. And I think sometimes there's a lot of judgment around this, like, oh, it's gotta be ceremonial, And it's like, okay, yeah, for sure. It's great to have the honor and the respect. And sometimes it's nice to go somewhere and dance or listen to live music. Yeah. And I still set intention. I still thank the medicine. I still mm-hmm. ask for permission before I take it. So it's still ceremony, but there's a little mm-hmm. more, like, I guess, fun or freedom.
Right. Or that. Now it's interesting to that you say that, because it can, I think there is a lot of stigma around just being like, oh, it's got to be used super intentional. You got to be sitting down, or you got to be in the dark, or you got to be, you know, going about this ways. And it's like, yes and no, you know, yes. Yeah. And whatever it is, like, same thing for me. If I'm going to, you know, go to a concert or something, it's like, this is a way for me to, and that's something that I think it's important for people to understand, is that, like, it is wherever you're using it, as long as you're intentional with it and you're mindful of, like, why you're using it, and it's not to escape, then you're going to find that part of the whole, or it's like you said, it's going to shine light on those dark spots, and you're going to be able to hopefully integrate whatever it is, whether it's just being playful. It's like, oh, I needed to laugh a lot more. You know, I need to be able to have fun, you know. And while things can be serious, and plant medicines are definitely very serious, and like, have fun, enjoy them, you know.
Yeah. This is a huge gift of this, of also of plant medicine. If it can bring out the playful side of you, the child side, that's such a healing part. And again, wholeness, it means also like We are integrating our inner child into our adult life. The inner child is not at the steering wheel anymore, right? It's not the one that's driving the car, but the inner child gets to come along for the ride, and playfulness is a huge part of it. And this is something that as adults get, I don't even like to say older, but like tighter, more rigid, play is one of the first things that fall, that like falls away. And every species on earth engages in play. I look out my windows all the time and I see squirrels like chasing each other, constantly playing. I see animals, dogs. I've had dogs that live to 20 years old, and till the end they're playing. And this is something that as humans we've lost a little bit. So yeah, if plant medicine brings out the play in us because it's recreational, okay, amazing. Like, we need that too. And I'm really trying to lean more into those things that I've had, like maybe some spiritual ego or righteousness around, or made it like taboo, like, oh, plant medicine, if it's not in ceremony, it's no good. And I'm trying to move into those things more, because this is also a big part of healing. And like, can I find God in the things that I've declared as taboo or not okay or not spiritual enough? And this has been a cool journey as well.
Yeah. And yeah, I 100% agree with everything you just said. And it's especially with like the inner child part, you know, it's like playfulness. And my buddy says this all the time. It's like, when you're having fun, that's when you're learning the most. Like when you're able to just play and be in the moment, it's a sign if you're laughing or any emotions, but when you're laughing at something and you're laughing with something, that's where I find myself to be the most present, you know. It's because you're just there, you're with it, you're having fun, you're in the flow. And that's when these things are able to, you're able to like release your guard and just understand it in a way that's like, okay, if I can laugh at these things, then
100%.
That's medicine there. Greetings, my friends. Thank you for hanging out with me for the past 20 minutes. I want to take a moment and invite the men that are listening in to join me on the current mountain that I'm climbing. This mountain is a gathering for men to become brothers and to further step into their kingship. The Brothers Beyond Men's Retreat is a 6-day journey down in Costa Rica. My boy Bill Robertson and I are excited to be leading this adventure together. And it's going to be quite fun. We're very excited for what we're going to get into, all the movement practices, story work, adventures on the land, on the 500-acre farm, horseback riding, beaches, waterfalls, workshops on many different things that are getting us closer to our heart and to our center so that we can lead our life with purpose. And yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. So if you're interested, it's happening in the spring, April 28th to May 4th. And you can head over to summittosoulmountain.com/brothersbeyond/ to get more details and to schedule a call with Bilbo or myself. So enjoy the rest of this conversation with my brother Alexander, and I'm sending love.
You know? Yeah. 100%. I don't know if you saw, there was a reel that was like viral, that was shared a bunch. And it said that, because you're talking about learning and how play helps with learning. And it said, on average, I don't know if you've seen this, on average, it takes something like 400 repetitions to create a new synapse in the brain to learn something, unless you're doing it with play. And then if you're playing, learning through play, it takes an average of like 20 to 40 repetitions. So it's like 10% easier. It takes one tenth of the amount of repetitions to learn something if you're doing it in play, if you're having fun while you're doing it. And yeah, that's super cool to learn. And you're right. Like when we're in play and laughter, the guard comes down, the walls come down, and I think we get into this state, this like liquid state, where we're able to transform more rather than being in our rigid boxes of just like, this is who I am, this is my identity. Right? This like robotic mode that I've seen in so many humans, that as we get tighter, we're so like, this is who I am, this is my shape, this is what I believe, this is just the way it is. And it's like, it makes me sad and angry that there's a lot of people that walk around the world thinking that they're stuck in their ways. And they're just like, this like rigid box that can't be shifted.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah.
Yeah. That blows my mind. And it makes a whole lot of sense to me, you know, that like, you know, learning, I'm thinking about sports right now, and like the best people in sports are the people who love playing that sport the most, because that's what brings them the most fun, you know. And it's like, if you're going to have fun while you're playing a sport, you're going to get good at it, you know. And same thing with anything else. If you're doing something that you're doing a job that you hate, you're very likely to not get very good at it, because why would you don't want to learn it. It's just something to pass the time and, you know, pay the bills or whatever it is. But if it's something that you really enjoy and you genuinely find fun in it, then you're going to get better at it, whatever it is.
Yeah. I think the secret too is like, because there's, I also listened to this in The War of Art by Stephen Pressfield. Great book. And
I listened to that.
Yeah. And they talk about amateur and professional, and like amateur is like the one that loves it, and a professional, it's a different level of commitment. It's a different level of effort that's put in by a professional, right? They're like in it day to day, even when they don't want to do it. Right. Mm-hmm. So this idea of like play helping you get better at something, I think a key is, can I have fun by putting in the hard work? And I've been feeling this lately in my life, like in the gym or taking cold plunges in the winter, where I'm like, I don't necessarily like it, but I can even have fun, like going into the edge. I can have fun. Like actually I'm feeling this when I'm in the gym, that feeling of fatigue, that feeling of not really being able to do any more reps, and actually liking that discomfort, actually like having fun with that discomfort. And there's some part of me, it's like, wow, this is I don't know the expression, but I'm enjoying the discomfort, the pain more than ever. And like, I can have fun in the pain. I'm like, yeah, bring it on. It's like this like kinky, I'm also mm-hmm. listening right now to Existential Kink, and it talks about this too. And it's like, yeah, it's like this weird kink of like, I like the discomfort. I like the pain of the ice bath at 7:30 in the morning when the sun is rising and it's so fucking cold outside. And I can just like, if I can enjoy that, I'm so free. I'm so mm-hmm. liberated.
Mm-hmm. That's why I like David Goggins so much. It's because it just makes me laugh. You know, it's like,
yeah.
You can do the most whack ass shit. And you're like when I go running and stuff, if I'm doing a long run, I start my mantra mile one, and I'll say that until I laugh at myself. And then when I get to a hard point in my run and I'm like, this fucking sucks, uh-huh. I start my mantra again, mile one, until I laugh. And I'm like, oh, Ryan, you're doing some stupid shit right now. You know, like whatever it is.
So you do some crazy runs, bro. Some crazy.
And it's all fun. Runs. You know, it's like, it sucks and it's fun, but it's the same thing in what you're saying. It's like that. It's interesting to, you know, hear you speak about the enjoying the discomfort, because
yeah,
that's
powerful.
I
love seeing the videos of you when you're on these like 15 mile runs in the winter, and you just like whole beard is icy. It's like, dude, fuck yeah, go. It's inspiring.
It's especially right now, it's starting to get cold and snowy, and I love the winter for that reason.
Yeah, it creates resilience, you know. Mm-hmm. This is a big thing too. It's like we do live in a world that, and I noticed this more as I started to dive deeper into men's work. It's like, we live in a world where a lot of men are, it's not even just men, it's like our society, it's they're so comfortable. We're so soft as a society. I'm generalizing here, 'cause I know there's some people mm-hmm. that are like doing the work, but in general, it's a super comfortable, soft society. Someone told me recently, they use this expression, hospice culture. Mm. And I was like, well, hospice culture, what is that? I was like, okay, hospice is meant to keep you comfortable until you die. And this is the culture that we live in. It's like, stay comfortable, you know, eat comfortable foods, stay in this range of 68 to 73 degrees all day long, all night long. And what happens is if you're so used to comfort, when life gives you these It's like the given discomfort or the given initiations. If we don't have any practice with that, then we tend to crumble, right? Like I've seen this a lot. People that live their life so comfortably, when they get some kind of diagnosis or a breakup or something like this, they crumble because there's no resilience built in their system. But if we can choose initiations, if we can choose discomfort on a regular basis, then when those given initiations or given discomforts come, we're like, oh, like I've been training for this. I'm mm-hmm. good. I'm good. Mm-hmm. I can feel discomfort. I can go without food for some time. I can be in the cold without a lot of layers for some time, you know, or I've experienced this too, because of some of these practices. When I've had in the past health issues, health challenges, when I've been hospitalized, instead of like losing my shit and feeling like a victim, I'm like, okay, this is a test too. You know, this is part of the curriculum. It's all grist for the mill, as Ram Dass says, like it's all fuel for evolution. And, mm-hmm. That's been really a super special thing in my life. And I've been loving the, you know, surrounding myself with more men that are doing the work with me, that are like, yes, let's get uncomfortable in the way we speak to each other, in how we take care of our bodies and what we eat and how we work. And, what a blessing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've never heard that term, hospice culture, and that's really fucked up because it's so true, you know, like so many people are just, and they don't even realize it, you know, they like, that's the normal, that's the way to live, you know, like yeah. There's and so I wanted to go two ways with this. Hospice draws me in the direction to talk about your relationship with death, and I also want to go down the rabbit hole of men's work with you and stuff, and what that's been like for you. Yeah, let me ask you first, what men's work is something that, you know, I do too. And I'm starting to get more into that and starting to facilitate that kinds of stuff and create those spaces. What out of men's work has been most beneficial for you, whether it's opening up to other men emotionally, being able to accountability, like what is it that's been most helpful for getting in collective groups of men?
Yeah. The pieces that have had the biggest impact on me is having men that we can talk about real shit. So the vulnerability, emotionality, like what's actually challenging us, what we're actually struggling with. Because I grew up, like I've always had a big group of guy friends. A lot of guy friends that I grew up with. We'd play sports all the time. And, you know, I'm still close with a handful of these men that I've known since 5 years old. But the difference is the level of intimacy, the level of depth that I got to experience in men's groups, which is different than what I experienced with these men I've been friends with my whole life. And there's really two big things that I feel. One is the intimacy, like being able to be seen in my shit and in my struggles, and being able to, yeah, be held in that and like witnessed in those processes. And then two, my men's groups, my brothers that are conscious and that we have these intimate connections with, they're like my GPS, right? GPS and my satellites. They help tell me where I'm at, because I have blind spots. Mm-hmm. And there's certain things that I don't realize about myself, and I feel pretty self-aware as a human, and I still have blind spots. Mm-hmm. And there's certain things that I don't even want to know. Like I don't even want to know about myself.
That's a big one.
And when I have these men, these satellites that are like, here, yeah, this is where you're at, you know, and like giving me feedback, honest, real feedback, not the sugar coating, people pleasing mm-hmm. things that I've experienced with other people. But like, yeah, to be able to hold me to a deeper level of accountability, to be able to really hold me to a deeper level of integrity. These are the things that have been such a gift and such a blessing, because I didn't have it for so much of my life. And I said this, I'm 34. Until about 30 years old, men's work wasn't a thing that I did. It's been a journey of the past 4 years or so, being around more conscious men, deliberately doing work together, deliberately sharing where we're at, the challenges we have, and the feedback piece to me is the one that's most valuable, is for men to tell me like, hey, you said you were going to do this and you're not, that's not integrity. You know, pieces like this, this is the things that I've really gotten most.
Yeah. And that's big, because from my perspective, like, that's what all men have a desire to be able to like live out, you know, as far as like being that person for other men, other women, children, whatever it is, like being able to say like, this is who I am and this is who I want to be. Am I doing what's in alignment with what I'm saying, or am I in those blind spots? Like that's really big. And to be able to, from like what I was hearing is like this, a lot of it's common for like drama bonding when it comes to relationships, as far as like when you share things and you're being intimate and vulnerable and stuff, a lot of times people can bring it into their own experience of like, yes, I've gone through this, and not seeing it in a way that's directed towards them rather than just like seeing it and holding space and saying, yeah, I see you, man. Like, now what are you going to do about it? Or like, what are you going to, you know, how are you going to move forward from here? Like, no judgment. And like, you can be better than this if you want to be. So that, yeah, that's very interesting. Yeah. What is, how would you encourage, knowing what you know now about like this possibility of intimacy with other men and stuff, like how would you encourage other young men and older men to lean into this?
Yeah, the more that I've been in these spaces, the more I realize that this is it's a necessary nutrient. Men need it. We need to be around other men. We need to be in spaces where we can take off our mask and be real. The encouragement is like, even if there's resistance, try it, go for it, right? There's nothing to really lose, and there's so much to gain. And you know, the time of the lone wolf is over. We're not meant to be doing it ourselves. And you know, and it's amazing what we can, how much we can grow and expand when we have a team. And something I really love in men's spaces that I've been is when people are like, hey, what is the, like, do you have a certain ask for us? Do you have an ask for us? Like, how can we support you? You know, and that's really powerful too, because I've been a lone wolf, you know, for a lot of my 20s in my business, my personal life. I suppressed a lot of shit. Like, I didn't know how to talk about certain things. And when I started to have these spaces where I was able to ask for support and get it, and also able to really express myself, so much healing happened, so much growth happened. So I think the biggest thing is find men that you are inspired by or motivated by, someone that kind of seems like a mentor, and see if they're doing some men's work. There's so many options now, whether it's online or in person. I love in person, like dropping in with men in person, whether it's, you know, doing a retreat or some kind of training or something like this, or just your like a local men's group. There's some in Philly where I live. And also the online component, it's great. It's great to have that convenience. Anywhere that I am in the world, I'm able to connect with my brothers. And I think that's my biggest thing, is like, go for it. Like, go lean in. And this is a bigger metaphor than just the men's work. It's, if there's some kind of resistance or discomfort, lean into it in life, because a lot of times in those areas that we have resistance to, or that maybe we think are taboo or whatever, this is where we find a lot of healing and a lot of evolution. And it's like the unconscious, and Carl Jung says it, until you make the unconscious conscious, the unconscious runs your life and you call it fate. And this is an opportunity to make the unconscious conscious, especially in men's group, men's work. Yeah.
Beautiful. And that's a good little segue into talking about death there, because the biggest thing that people have on their deathbed is regret about, you know, did I love enough? Did I, you know, could I have been happier? Could I have taken, you know, that one step forward in this direction? What would have happened if I would have done that and stuff? So with that being said, what's your understanding of death? Let me ask you that first.
Yeah. Well, I would say that in my 20s, I was diagnosed with Crohn's disease and type 1 diabetes. And I was in the hospital a bunch of times, and I had some pretty serious infections at points that were, yeah, if it was maybe 50 years ago, I probably would have died, right? So death was in my awareness and consciousness. And growing up, I had some really close friends die, like baseball teammates die. I had a first cousin die when she was 19. Like, so death was present in my life. And I think I wasn't fully aware of it until I started to learn or hear about the death meditations, that it's like a Buddhist practice. And it's also a practice in Bhutan, where they contemplate death. And I started to realize, like, wow, actually, when I think about death, it makes me, it scares me into living the life that I really want to live. And I think this is one of the best benefits of death is it's like, if I really get real on, well, death is coming and I don't know when it's going to come, right? Like, I take care of myself, whatever, there's an average age, an average lifespan, but people die all the time suddenly. And when I get to that reflection of like, death is coming, I don't know when it's coming, it's like, wow, I have work to do in this world. It helps me remember my dharma and remember that I don't have that much time for my dharma. Like, I don't know. I can't bullshit. I can't waste time. So that's been really, really powerful for me in a lot of different ways. And I look back at these like diseases and diagnoses as a blessing. Now, it's been the hardest things in my life at the time, but now a blessing, because it's really helped me live my life instead of living for somebody else. And I think this is one of the biggest regrets. And this is what so many people are doing. They're living life for their parents or for society instead of getting really clear and quiet. And it's like, how do I really want to live? And that's a transformative process. And it's a challenge, but it's so powerful to go there and to reflect on death. And then on a different level that I've noticed, the microcosm level, it's like death's happening all the time. And what, like, can we pay attention to the small deaths, which is like the end of the day, right? It's a mini death. The doing some kind of transformation. I lead yoga teacher trainings and I tell people, like, hey, you have to be willing to let parts of you die if you're going to do this, because that's what's going to happen. Like, there's going to be old defense mechanisms. There's going to be old identities that are going to die. And if we're not comfortable with that, then we don't get the medicine of it. Like, death is such a medicine. So yeah. So changing the end of the day, the exhale is even a little death. And it's like all these little moments are actually opportunities, not necessarily just about death, but it's always an opportunity for rebirth too. And rebirth is, it's beautiful. This idea, and this is like a mindfulness meditation idea too, of like, begin again. So the more that I realize that death is happening all the time and death is coming, I get to begin again. I get to begin again. I get to begin again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's all fascinating. And especially like people are often disconnected from death, and even though it's right in front of their face, like you said, breathing every day is a death. You know, when we go to sleep, plant medicine journeys can be, you know, very, relational to death. And then also like, yeah, our relationship with food, like people, you know, even outside of themselves, like death is life, you know, like for us to be here, we have to die and we have to, you know, or like life has to go through that process for other life to be there and stuff.
Totally. Even death, actual death that happens. This is a little bit of like hospice culture going back to it. When people are dying, they are typically dying so loaded with things that numb them, and, you know, like morphine, things that keep them so unconscious. So people are not dying consciously. And like, where are people dying these days? I had a huge ayahuasca journey about this topic of like, when people go to die, we send them to hospitals and nursing homes, and like we send them away so that we're not so present of it, and we send them into these like ICUs, intensive care units, where it costs $250,000 to give ventilators and all these medicines, and it's like, this is not the natural way, right? Like mm-hmm. it's it, this is the ayahuasca ceremony. It was like I have a prayer that when my parents die, that they're surrounded by their grandkids and their family, and they're able to die at home, and the grandkids are able to experience death and have the gift of that and have the consciousness of it, because it is such a beautiful transition. Like just like birth, it's a beautiful transition out of this soul, out of this body.
Mm-hmm.
And our whole society is like, get it away from us. We don't see it and numb it, like make it a whole numbing experience. And I'm on such a mission to for myself and people to feel more, because there's so much healing, and it's like, this is what we're here for. It's not just to be happy and to be comfortable and to feel good all the time. It's to just feel alive. This is now my mission. It's like, how can I bring more aliveness into the world? More eros, more aliveness. The ups and downs of life are fucking beautiful. Let's stop numbing. Yeah, let's stop numbing ourselves from it.
Mm-hmm.
Man,
that was one thing that I learned from you when I first started working with you was like, you talk about this idea of being a permission slip to people, you know, like being able to be your full self, being, you know, show up in all of the emotions that us humans get to experience, and that's like so powerful. To be able to understand that like we're here and we get to feel these things, and to feel grateful for when you're angry with somebody, or when you're angry with yourself, or when you're feeling really sad, and learning that sadness is a way for you to feel true love, you know, for yourself, for other people. When you're feeling happy, and you can be like, why am I feeling happy? You know, so much of the society says don't feel these things, or just like forget about it, you know, put it to the side. So I think I'm very grateful for you and for people like you to be those, you know, those permission slips, and to be like just showing up and say, yo, it's all okay. You know, you can be you, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Especially with the feelings, because again, we live in a society that's like, don't feel, right? Stay comfortable. Don't feel things. And I love the Joseph Campbell quote, bliss is any feeling fully mm-hmm. felt. And I've experienced it now. Now that I'm more conscious with my feelings, I've had experiences, even just a few weeks ago, like deep grief, like layers and years of grief. And it was like I felt the maybe the pain of grief, but there was also so much pleasure in it and feeling so deeply. And it really was this like blissful experience. And so cool that we get to experience that in a space that I was always told to avoid. Like, don't go there. Mm-hmm. Don't go there. You're gonna get stuck. It's gonna be bad. You're a child, you're that's weak or girly or whatever. And I'm like, nah, this is actually like, it's what makes me a human.
This is power.
Yeah. Power. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I love that. Yeah. So we're coming up to the end here. So I got two questions for you. One, yeah. I want to just give you some space, because you know, I mentioned like you were such a guiding light to me in my journey and me being who I am and stuff. And I want to give you a little bit of space for people to, you know, be able to work with you, come on your retreats. And if you want to share about what your next yoga teacher training is, and what other retreats you're going to be leading and stuff.
Thank you, brother. I first want to say, I hear you saying like, I was one of your first coaches and a big inspiration for you. And it's been so cool to watch you on your journey and watch you step deeper into leadership. And I feel it deeply, and it's cool. This is all manifestation. Like so many of the things that we talked about back in 2020, you're doing now. And I'm proud of you.
Thank
and
you.
And it's been really cool to witness. And Yeah, the things that I'm most excited about right now, I there's really like for me, it's like the deepest level of transformation is what I love. So my yoga teacher training and somatic leadership training, it's a dual certification program, and it's the next one is in Costa Rica. So the way this works is it's a hybrid course. It's about a month online, and then 15 days and 15 nights in person, and then another month for integration. So the beginning online portion is really about self-mastery. It's like creating the disciplines in your life to live a yogic lifestyle, right? To embody some of the practices, meditation, yoga, breath work, have these daily rituals. And this idea of self-mastery, like if you're not your own master, then you're going to pick someone else to master you. And if we want to be free, if we want to be empowered, then we want to be our own master. Then the in-person part is where we're really in the arena. We're doing different experiments on intimacy. We're learning to teach. We're learning to step into our power, to use our voice. It's super, super transformational to spend 15 days in it with like your soul family in Costa Rica at Tierra Amor, which I know you're also leading a retreat. It's such a special place. I was there for about a month earlier this year, and it was a portal for me. Like so much shifted and changed in that time. So I'm really excited to be back there. And then built in is integration. It's what I said before. It's like the medicine is integration. It's in the integration. This is the most important part. So we have it built into our program so that not only do you get the changes on a personal level, but you as a teacher, when you're learning these things, there's exercises, there's practices so that you are still sharpening the tools even after the in-person experience. So really excited for that. There's another dual certification course that I'm co-leading in Guatemala at the end of April. And this one is it's a permaculture design course, permaculture design certificate, PDC, and somatic leadership. So this isn't a yoga teacher training. This is more about learning about the nervous system, learning about somatics, and being a leader in that field, learning to hold space, and at the same time learning how to work with the earth to help it be as abundant as possible and have these efficient ways of working with the earth, especially if you have a piece of land. This is what the PDC is really for. So you can design and create the blueprint for your homestead. Which is I'm super excited about. And then in addition to those two things, I have an online membership where you can take some of my classes, meditations, breathwork sessions, and I lead one-on-one coaching. I've been working with more men. I also work with women. But it's really on living it's a very holistic approach. So it's a emotional alchemy, it's physical health, embodiment practices, somatics, and if someone really wants to like level up in all the areas of their life, this is what I help people do.
And my man's delivers.
Thank you,
Yeah,
my
dude.
brother.
I'm super excited for you to. I love seeing all your content and stuff that you put out and the journeys. And one of these days, I know I'm gonna be at one of your immersions and stuff. And
Sir.
I think it's very important to say, like, especially with the way that you have like these dual certifications and everything, it's important for people to know, like, even if you don't want to be a yoga teacher, or like what you're doing and what you're teaching and how you coach and stuff, it goes so much deeper into just, being fully embodied and being the master of whoever you want to be and stuff. So I think
Yeah,
that's like, I
100%.
wanted to add that. And then, so my last question for you, so I'd like to ask all my guests this, and it's always fascinating to see where it goes and stuff. So what does soul mean to you?
What does soul mean to me? So I believe soul is not something that I have, but it's who I am. And I believe that soul is the little spark of divinity that is in everything, right? So like I believe that I am a piece of God. Like there's some part of me that is God, but also God is way bigger than me. And there's like the individual soul and the universal, the one soul. And I think that we're all part of it on a deep level, and also we get to have this experience of duality. We get to have this experience as a human, as in separation, which is actually such a cool gift and such a cool blessing to have the unique blueprints that we have. But to me, yeah, soul is the Soul is the divinity that's within each of us. And it's like the, yeah, I even think about the breath that's in each of us, right? The word breath in a lot of ancient languages is the same word for soul. So I think that this, like, this breath of life is what I call soul.
Fucking beautiful. Well said.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you, bro.
Very fascinating. Well, thank you so much, Alexander, for hopping on the trail with me, sharing your story, sharing your wisdom, your perspective. And yeah, I'm very, very grateful to have you as a brother, and to just, you know, live in a lifetime where what you're doing, what I'm doing, what is expanding is possible and is potential and stuff. So thank you for hopping on here with me.
Thank you, Ryan. I realized that one thing, I don't know if you're going to put this in the notes or something, but if people want to find me, alexanderawakens.com or on Instagram, Alexander Awakens. And yeah, look forward to connecting. If you feel inspired by this, send me a message. I love reaching out to the people that feel resonance, and there's a reason. So
beautiful. Yeah. Thanks, brother.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of Summit to Soul Mountain. This was a podcast, long time coming. I'm grateful to share it with you and to connect with my brother Alexander. If you enjoyed this conversation, I encourage you to leave a rating and share a comment of what you connected with, because it's very helpful for me to know what you liked about this conversation so that I can continue to share valuable conversations that fancy. So I'm grateful for you to be here. If you were curious about the Brothers Beyond Men's Retreat and to schedule a connection call, head over to summittosoulmountain.com/brothersbeyond/, and check it out. I will join you on the trail next time. Cheers.